empathy maybe gelled with critical thinking skills and the ability to communicate, maybe amongst the most important things that you can offer to a team. You want to create an environment in which they know they're cared for. They know they're looked after. They know that their leadership is actually desirous of their success, not just the company's success, but their individual success. So it requires a level of empathy and understanding of what their role is, what their life is.
This podcast is brought to you by Hey Taco, the only peer-to-peer recognition platform that uses tacos to help teams around the world share gratitude. I'm Doug.
I'm Una.
This is our podcast,
Amazing Teams.
Steve Hedrick, welcome to the Amazing Teams podcast.
Thanks so much, Doug. Thrilled to be here.
Steve, we're so excited to have you, and I'll read to our listeners a little short introduction to your vast background. So Steve is the chairman, president, and CEO of AVN Corporation in South Charleston, West Virginia, specializing in market-driven innovation, research, and manufacturing for various industries. With over three decades of leadership experience, including 20 years in the petrochemical industry, Steve has led businesses and teams globally, focusing on improving business results and safety systems. Steve is a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point and serves on several boards of directors, including the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce and the West Virginia Manufacturers Association. Steve, did I miss anything that you'd like to include?
Hey, that was almost way too much. So I'm sometimes embarrassed by the bio because it seems like it goes on too long, but that's what matters, right? The only thing is not in the bio. Maybe I'll write it in there one of these days. I'm married to a lovely lady who has moved 14 times with me, and she's an abundantly tolerant human being, and father of two great gentlemen who have great wives of their own and children of their own. So that's what I would add, I guess.
That's a great addition. 14 times is no small feat.
No. And there's that short list of like five things that are the most stressful things you can do in your life. And of course, that's in the five. And the reality is we've done it that many times. It's, maybe it speaks to a little bit of resilience between the two of us and mutually supporting relationship.
And probably great packing skills to add to that.
Better than you can imagine.
Steve, so you have led teams in your military career, now in your business career. What does it take to build an amazing team in one sentence?
The necessary ingredients of a magnificent team are fantastic teammates who are rallied around a cause or mission that they can express their passion in with empathetic leadership.
That was pretty good. Pre-recording, I talked to Una and I said, I know Steve's going to talk about empathy. I just want to ask you, how important is empathy in a leadership role?
The number one ingredient, as I have found across a career, having the opportunity to lead teams to do hard things, empathy's maybe gelled with critical thinking skills and the ability to communicate, maybe amongst the most important things that you can offer to a team. You want to create an environment in which they know they're cared for. They know they're looked after. They know that their leadership is actually desirous of their success, not just the company's success, but their individual success. So it requires a level of empathy and understanding of what their role is, what their life is, how the unique demands on each individual's life gets brought, in uniform when I was in uniform and I guess brought to the workplace here and where everywhere else I've worked. So we can't simply avoid that truth. And to not offer empathy with regards to the greatness of life and the challenges of life, I think creates an environment where folks don't want to bring their whole selves. For a company like AVN to be extremely successful, to delight our customers, we need our folks that are our teammates to bring their whole selves, to be complete, and to recognize that, again, that their leadership is empathetic towards their position, towards their challenges, towards their excellence and their shortcomings, right? And we want for their success. Yeah. Empathy is unbelievably important. And I say that because we as humans really need that. If you think back even to your childhood and to your best friends, they understood what was going on in your life. They understood what was challenging you. They understood what was great for you. And you wanted to be around those people. Imagine, bringing that to the workplace and creating an environment where people might actually want to be there.
How do you go about doing that every day at AVN and throughout your career? It isn't always easy to show up and be empathetic and live that every single day.
First, I'll admit to you that I didn't live it every single day of my career. I am a human. I fail and on occasion have to dust myself off, get back up and lead my people. Because that's true, while I actually demand delivery of excellence out of myself every day and I expect it out of the folks that I work with, reality is we're imperfect. On the days in which, hopefully not too many days in a row, in which maybe I failed to deliver the empathy that my people, they deserved, I like to think that I course corrected pretty quickly and looked at the guy in the mirror and gave him a couple of key sentences that aren't to be recorded and told him to get back in the saddle, get after it, because my people deserve that.
Maybe I'm being stereotypical, Steve, but from a military background, military and empathy, not necessarily something people associate and say in the same sentence.
Uh-huh.
How did you learn the importance of empathy throughout your military career and training?
I'm going to tell you that people who have not been in the military don't understand that empathetic leadership occurs every day in the military. I will tell you that I'm really lucky, really fortunate. As they say, I'm a kid from Kelly's Creek, from Cedar Grove, West Virginia, who got the opportunity to go to West Point. And the grounding in leadership that I was able to earn at West Point, in addition to the well-rounded education that I got there, I'm really fortunate that I had that opportunity early in my life as a young adult. I had fantastic leadership when I was in the military, and I got to see what right looked like with regards to people who really were interested in everything that was going on about you and the overall outcome, and how me as a subordinate leader then, right, as a lieutenant and a captain in the military, could lead my people to be successful as part of an integrated team that was bigger than me. Whatever unit that I was in charge of or commanded, I had units on the left and right of me that were counting on me to do a great job with that. I did see in the military what great empathetic leadership actually looked like. There's a guy named Bill Weber. He retired as a general officer. Hopefully you guys don't mind me naming somebody's name, but he was then Lieutenant Colonel Bill Weber. I deployed with him. He's a fantastic leader, great personality, great sense of humor, and as serious as anybody you've ever met in your life when it's time to be serious. He knew who my wife was. He knew my son's name. By the way, I was one of 711 people that he was in charge of, but he knew. I also was made to feel by then Colonel Weber, later General Weber, that I had a fantastic career in front of me because I was doing the right things. I mean, he understood the things that motivated me from a family perspective and from a military perspective, and he showed the way, right? So that carries forward directly into the civilian sector. I recognize I also had a gentleman that I worked with at one point in my career who was a former Special Forces E5, right, sergeant, who E5, E6, he left before he was an E7. But the point I'm getting ready to make is it's a different relationship that a leader in the military is going to have with his people or her people than you're going to have in the civilian sector. And this is a quote from him, right? So I'm not being dramatic here, but he pulled me aside one day, as great non-commissioned officers do, by the way. And he let me know that while I was doing great things as a leader for that organization, these people will not die for you. So if you think about it, a military perspective and the orders that you have to give and the risk that people take on behalf of the mission, the flag, the country, that, there is no lengths to which you won't go for them, right? As a leader. And he expressed to me, you need to understand this is not that way. You're giving us leadership that almost feels like you're having that expectation, not that you desire for anybody to meet their demise, but you're giving us everything. You're all in and leading us. And I told him, I don't know how else to lead people except to give them everything that I think they deserve. He didn't get me to cool my jets, but he gave me a nice insight as to how people probably experience leadership in the civilian sector versus in the military. Great empathetic leadership. People respond to it the world around. Setting the example, people absolutely respond to it the world around. But the all-in mentality, I think, with regards to the military, is just a little bit different than full go 100% in for the civilian sector. Does that make sense?
A little. Switching gears here, let's talk about AVN Corp. I'm curious around how you got started and where you're at, team size, any kind of details you'd like to share around what you're doing there at AVN
Love Corp. To. The company's got 21 years or so of legacy behind it. We started as the Mid-Atlantic Technology Research and Innovation Center, also known as MATRIC, back in the day. Brilliant guy called Dr. George Keller, who worked his way through Union Carbide and found an end to his career with Dow. He saw a so-called brain drain that was getting ready to occur around the closure of a research and technology center that had been part of an acquisition of Dow of Union Carbide. And he didn't want to see his thousands of friends go away and go someplace else and work. And so Dr. Keller, all, you know, 5'1" of him at the time, God rest his soul, he's passed away. But he decided that this thing called MATRIC needed to get started. And so he did. And he rallied a community around the idea that some buildings, one of which I'm standing in, didn't need to be knocked down. And some people who were brilliant didn't need to leave the area of southern West Virginia. And he got things rolling and rallied people around something that was very important. And they could express their passion and to have good leadership. And so 8 years into, or 9 years into the company's existence, I was fortunate to have the board of directors of the company to engage me and recruit me to potentially come grow the company. And so we set about to make that happen after a series of conversations, and I joined the company, and we worked very hard to grow it. Fast forward to opportunities around fantastic people running laboratories, running pilot plants, running advanced systems and software technologies piece to our company. We recognized for the ability to grow our company further, to attract key talent from around the planet, we needed an opportunity to share in the company's successes in a way that we couldn't necessarily as a 501c3, which we were as MATRIC, and to expand into chemical manufacturing. We needed a way for those who issue permits, the DEP and the EPA, federal EPA, to understand how a company can execute this thing called manufacturing. And that put us in a position where we had to figure out how to take a 501c3 and call it migrated into a for-profit entity. There's a legal pathway to get it done. I won't bore you with the details, but we executed that with great assistance from our legal team and external law firm, and created AVN Corporation, which acquired the full assets of what was MATRIC. That's bottling up, and the enormity of effort that went into that, you can imagine it was not small. The people did a fantastic job, amazing job to get that done, but it created a pathway for us to do profit sharing, which I'm proud to say that we're offering all of our employees to issue shares of AVN Corporation at the outset to those who carried the ball across the finish line, which was everybody, by the way, not a select few. Everybody got a piece of the company. And create an opportunity for us to be successful in a way that created an opportunity for us to earn permits from organizations that needed to understand who we were and what we were after. And we've done that. That's a brief history of our company. But again, today we have multiple business units, our pilot plant business unit, our laboratory business unit, advanced software and systems technology business unit, and our manufacturing business unit, supported by tremendous people in our business support group, from HR and accounting and controlling and the full suite treasury of activities that have to go on to make a company successful. I have fantastic teammates, better teammates than I probably deserve. To your question, Una, earlier, I do my best every day to serve them the way that they need to be served.
Steve, how many people are on your team currently at AVN?
Yeah, so we're a round number, about 100 people, right? Scattered across 11 states in the United States, from Pacific Northwest, across the Deep South, across the Midwest, as a matter of fact, and into Appalachia. We've got people all over the place. Great company. I may be biased, but nonetheless, I'll still say great company anyhow.
And it sounds like the team stayed together throughout this big change of changing the legal status, which also made changes in the brand and certain things internally. The team stayed together.
So if I can be prideful for just a moment, I will tell you that we set two markers out when we set about the activities that were important for us to take up and turned MATRIC into AVN Corporation. And the two markers really were, outside of keeping my people safe, taking care of the environment, we wanted to retain all of our employees and we wanted to retain our customers. It may seem obvious, but when you go through a transformation like that, is a communication challenge. It's a pretty demanding leadership environment. And what I can tell you is we retained 100% of our employees and we retained 100% of our customer base. We had a plan to execute, an executable plan, to get both of those things done. And I'm proud of my subordinate leaders because they delivered excellence all throughout, again, a very demanding window of time in their careers to get that done. And I'm proud of my people to lean in. They could have had a questioning attitude beyond which was reasonable. Instead of that, they brought their normal questioning attitude and critical thinking skills and asked good, hard questions and leaned in with us, right? And I'm proud of all of them for doing so.
Steve, I'm curious, why do you think the board chose you?
That's a great question. Nobody's asked me that before. Yeah, I'm from Southern West Virginia myself. I happen to be from, the sticks of Southern West Virginia, born and raised. I had been a vice president with another $65 billion business that I had been part of and probably had many of the attributes that they wanted in somebody with a skill set to come do this thing. But likely my passion for the people and my passion for this geography may have swayed them a little bit because I didn't hide it. I don't hide it. It's important to me. I to drive growth of an American business now helps drive me on a day-by-day basis. At the time, driving growth of a company, you should recognize also some of the people that are my teammates, that are my employees today, I grew up with. It shouldn't be lost on your audience or on you guys that that's true. Literally since diapers, I've known some of these people. And to create an opportunity for them to be wildly successful, to have their families be engaged and be able to live here. By the way, it's a great place to live, right? Southern West Virginia is a fantastic place to live, work, and play, raise a family, low crime, low cost of living, and really good people. I like to create an environment for people to be successful in that. And I want for more people to understand that truth. So maybe that's why they chose me, right? Because I love it here and I want to grow this company here. I won't say more than anything else, but it's pretty doggone important to me.
That's great. Our podcast is called Amazing Teams. We're building a team here. Any advice for others who are trying to build an amazing team? Anything you can share? Tips, ideas?
Don't be afraid to fail. Recognize that you're going to. Entrepreneurial activities and growing teams, right, necessitates leadership that's willing to take calculated risk and lean in pretty hard. Recognize that it's going to hurt on occasion and also be completely unafraid to gather people on your team that don't think exactly like you, but are willing to be mission-oriented like you. Important people who are trying to build an amazing team had better recognize that they don't want everybody to think like them. Because if they do, then you're going to get groupthink and it's going to lead you astray. If it's a leader that we're speaking to, not just people who are, you know, teammates, I'm thrilled to maybe state the obvious, but nonetheless, never aspire to be the smartest person in the room. Hire people who are smarter than you, who bring expertise in different fields that you're not an expert in, and gel that team into people getting to offer their whole selves, whether it's a communications expert, a legal expert, HR expert, finance, treasury, controlling, science. Be thrilled that people know more about it than you. Create the opportunity for them to go be wildly successful. I would offer that's as important as anything else maybe I've said is if you're the smartest man or woman in the room, you're in the wrong room. That's for sure.
Steve, how do you keep your distributed team together across 11 states? How do you help them get to know each other, understand each other's colleagues, and work together so collaboratively?
We engage our teammates on platforms like this to make sure that people see faces, not just hear voices. When they're introduced to the team, we celebrate them in. Every human being in the company receives an email that describes the uncommon interests of our new teammates and common interests, right, around science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Yeah, what do they like to do that makes them whole? Do they like to fish? Do they like to cycle? Do they like to run? Like to go to the gym? Whatever, right? Whatever it is they like to do, we like for our teammates to understand that about them and have leaders of subordinate elements of our company. There was a day when we didn't have people on the West Coast, right? Mark Galeen is the leader of our AST team. And he lives in Charlotte. We were an East Coast-centric team for a good while there. When we hired people on the West Coast, and didn't demand that they move to the East Coast. We hired them because they were great talent and they lived where they wanted to live. Mark was flexible. He changed standing meetings that he'd had for years for the whole team to gather in one spot in his organization and moved them to the middle of the day. So, okay, it's not the very beginning of the day for the people on the East Coast, but if he kept it at exactly that time, he would be demanding people to get up at 3 a.m. in Oregon. Unsat, right? That doesn't work. And so I applaud Mark, an empathetic leader, understanding that he had folks who had a different need. He asked for that flexibility out of his team. He showed that flexibility as a leader, and he got that done. Seems like a little thing, but I can show you the example of dozens of people who would say to their new teammate, this is the time of the meeting, show up. And Mark didn't do that and doesn't do that. That's an example. So we want for our people to know each other, whether, again, you live in Dallas or you live in Morgantown, West Virginia. And so we create an environment, an opportunity for people to do that. And guess what? We value them. We value the individual contributions. We value them, acknowledge them. And I have to say, we have this this amazing person, Tammy Baker, who's in charge of HR for the company, who keeps her ear to the ground as well as anybody I know. And for if any of my teammates listen to this afterwards, I need you to know this. She doesn't betray trust of anybody, but she does listen. And when something is significant that's going on, she comes and tells me. She just doesn't tell me who it is. She helps me understand that there are, you know, currents and waves that are going on in the organization, things that we need to respond to, but she doesn't betray the trust of any individual in the company. And I consider that to be invaluable in being able to lead people, to have somebody like Tammy on the team who, is she trustworthy? Of course she is, right? I mean, she's great at her job. She knows her craft technically. She's a great person. So my teammates are willing to go talk with her about sensitive topics sometimes, hard topics other times. Or, yeah, imagine that sometimes they show up in Tammy's shop and talk about how great things are going, right? All that's good information or intel for a leader to have with regards to what's going on in the company.
That's really interesting. So I'm curious, when she comes to you, mm-hmm. is she looking for a response from you, or is she just more or less trying to keep you in the loop of things?
It depends, right? It depends on the gravity of circumstance. And sometimes Tammy asks for guidance. Sometimes Tammy brings information and says, I'm not asking for you to do anything with this, but I need you to know what's going on. And because it informs leadership, it informs what next steps should be, can be, ought to be. And so it doesn't have to be a grand gesture of something that's getting ready to occur. She doesn't ask for that. But when we're having cookouts for the company, and those cookouts have got a key set of individuals who absolutely love this thing, they organize it themselves, and we ask them to deliver the cookout. We send to the people in other locations. We'll send Grubhub cards, right, whatever, and make sure that everybody gets to eat at the same time. Teams that eat together stay together, by the way. It's a thing. But sometimes when Tammy's informed me of something that's an undercurrent, I can walk around a parking lot or walk around a screen like this with people and ask some reasonable questions to draw out those important topics, right? And again, I credit her for being able to help not just me do it, but other leaders in the company do it as well. She's great at that.
Teams that eat together, stay together. I love that.
It's true. Think about it. If you break bread together, then you've got a wholly different relationship than people who don't. I also say the teams that sweat together probably stay together too, but that's a whole different problem, right? I like to work out, and I love it when teammates occasionally show up and work out at the same time. And again, you get to see people under a different kind of duress, a different kind of stress, and I mean in a good way, right? Workouts are a good kind of stress. So when at the same time you get to share endorphins at the end of a workout, it's pretty good, right? There's a happy moment there that, again, bonds people. I also like to eat, so.
Oh, Steve, earlier you said you have the opportunity to lead teams to do hard things.
Yeah.
What is the hardest thing you have led a team through, whether your current team or previous teams?
There was a time, earlier in my career when the company that I worked for asked me to go lead a team out of an unbelievably difficult circumstance where they'd had a couple of fatalities at a manufacturing site, and the culture of the organization had started to splinter a bit. And the company asked me to go solve a hard problem, right? To show up and go do this thing and help people to understand that there is a a true north that's pretty good. And there's a vision that's pretty good that we can all aspire to, and mountains we can climb together, right? That said, that's a hard environment where you're the newbie, as might be called, and your desire is to get people to change direction pretty hard, pretty fast, and still value them, right? It's difficult. You know, we did some really amazingly hard things to deviate course for that organization. In the end, the company decided to shut that organization down completely. I'm proud of the teammates who were there. I'm proud that they turned a corner with regards to taking care of each other, taking care of their own safety, taking care of the environment, taking care of the manufacturing site, the customers, and being able to see, yeah, there's a future out there that is bigger than them. And it was hard. I am not proud to offer that I've terminated a lot of folks in my journey who deserve to leave an organization because, you know, they were doing things that were not part of the value set for that organization. I'm not proud of the fact that I had to lay a lot of people off for the company at that manufacturing site. I hated that. There's a few things professionally that I've hated more because as a leader, you know, when you're owning your position, I feel like it's my responsibility to put bricks down for my people to walk on, get out there and get after that so that they can do their thing, create an environment in which they can do their thing, or paths upon which they can walk to do their thing. And in that environment, I simply couldn't lay enough bricks down fast enough. As I said earlier, you know, that feeling of failure as a leader. Yeah, I felt that then. That was very hard. I would offer that it touched a couple of thousand people, right? But anybody who was in that organization, while I feel like I may have failed them because I couldn't get enough bricks down in front of them to keep that thing rolling, to a person that I think that they would acknowledge how much I cared about. And that was unavoidable as part of that hard thing. So demanding environment for leadership, demanding environment for my subordinate leaders to be wildly successful. And in the end, the company made a financial decision that needed to be taken up, I guess. I didn't like it, but I carried the mission out on behalf of the company. And I'm still in touch with a bunch of those people, by the way. I still am. And they're great people. They've gone on, some of them have gone on to do some fantastic things in their careers. And I'm proud of them, right? Proud of the things that they achieved after they came through that.
Thank you for sharing that story. That sounds like a very, very difficult situation to be in.
It was tough. Absolutely tough. I can name a bunch of names of people that I worked with then who were resilient, powerful examples of what right looks like, whether they're subordinate leader, individual contributor, whatever. I'm proud to have worked with those folks. I'm not proud that all those jobs were lost, but at the end of the day, not my decision, right?
Steve, I'm curious what inspires you and keeps you motivated.
What inspires me? Motivation. I'm going to say something to you that hopefully makes sense. Discipline trumps motivation every day. And so I would love to have an honest answer that I've been empathetic every day as a leader, but I have not been. I would love to say that I set an example of motivation every day, but across 30 years, that just can't be true, right? So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to myself ever. So I like to believe for sure that I'm a pretty disciplined individual, and that creates the opportunity for my motivation to not necessarily have to have a throttle, so that I'm pretty highly motivated. And again, I wear that on my sleeve. I enjoy it. I'm inspired to your question by my people. I'm inspired by some of the things that our customers are trying to get done to change the world from a chemical industry basis and a circular economy, and some of the things that we get to work with. I'm inspired by that. I don't really try and throttle my motivation. I just go in all out. And I kind of like to live that way. And when my motivation wanes, because that's the reality of these things, I like to think I have the discipline to carry me through those days. Yeah.
Got it. That makes sense. This podcast is brought to you and our listeners by Hey Taco. And Hey Taco is a peer-to-peer recognition tool. With Hey Taco, you have 5 tacos you can give each day to recognize someone for something they've done or to just simply show your appreciation. Steve, who are you giving your 5 tacos to today and why?
First taco I'd have to give is to my wife. She's powered through 14 moves, and she's powered through the military, and she's powered through deployments and all the things that one time or another I thought was really important. And sometimes it really was, and sometimes I learned later that maybe it wasn't quite as important, but she's tolerated all of it. So I give her a taco. George Keller, the gentleman I mentioned to you earlier, gives him a taco. Brief bit on George. I just love the guy. God rest his soul. I love him. for anybody who has appreciated a higher quality of life, who required a portable oxygen concentrator to wear over their shoulders so that they could walk around with their grandkids and have enough oxygen in their blood because their system wasn't working well enough, he led a team to develop that. He changed the world, literally changed the world, this guy did. And George's claim to fame, often introduced himself this way, even north of 80 years old, as he was the best badminton player in Southern West Virginia at one point in his life. I'm not kidding. Anybody who knows or knew him knows that's true. But he's done so many magnificent things, influenced lives. I mentioned Bill Weber. Give him a taco. I'd have a taco with him any day of the week that he wanted one. I'd fly to where he is. Great guy. He is one of the early leaders that I saw where this is what right looks like, and perfectly willing to be as demanding as anybody you've ever wanted to be around, but empathetic, right? Who cared and still does, right? He's still that guy. He's a great guy. I don't know if you're familiar with Marcus Aurelius by any chance. Think about fantastic leadership in the long time ago. He's a Stoic, was a Stoic. He learned, Seneca's ways. He learned about being able to control oneself. As important as all that was, he was a very powerful leader, but he wrote it down. Okay? He was willing to write it down for those of us this many decades, centuries later, to read his learnings about simple things that are of utmost importance, about clean living, about good leadership, about knowing oneself, taking care of others. Again, I never met the guy, so I only have the lens of history through which to look. But I'd give him a taco. I read his writings on a, I can't say daily basis, but there's not too many weeks that have gone by in a lot of years that I haven't read something from him. I've got one more, right? I'd give maybe my last taco today to Teddy Roosevelt. Everybody's read, listened to, maybe given, written, the man in the arena speech, right? It speaks to me. It speaks to a lot of people around me that, you gotta be willing to fail, be willing to get dirty, be willing to dust yourself off, help your teammates up, get after it again. But the death of me, would be to sit on the sidelines and not go get dirty, and not go get after it. So I'd give a taco to Teddy Roosevelt. Matter of fact, if I could go sit down with him and listen to him, I'd hand deliver that taco, right? So anyhow, those are my five tacos today. Thanks for letting me give them out.
Of course. I love it. Well, thank you for being on our podcast. Thank you for your time, your stories, and your wisdom. We really appreciate it.
I'm incredibly grateful for you guys to reach out to me and give me the opportunity to chat with you about some really important things and some very important people too, right? My teammates now. So thank you for what you're doing. Hopefully you guys have a good, safe rest of your day and the rest of the way. Okay.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for listening. One of the important things about building a team is gratitude. If you're looking to add more gratitude into your team, check out heytaco.com. We are clearly biased, but it really does work. Use the code AMAZINGTEAMS to receive 15% off for the first 3 months of your subscription.